Well, good morning. I'm so glad that you guys are here. It's good to see you. I'm Brent. I'm the lead pastor, and I am fascinated by social media. Anybody else have a fascination with it? I mean, I know several of you are on Facebook. Marianne Moore loves to post pictures of what food and drink she's had. It's amazing. So if you want to know good restaurants, Marianne's the person you go to. I look across the crowd, and I see several of you, you know, on Facebook. There are more social media networks than just that. There's things like Twitter, and Instagram, and Snapchat, and you know, Pastor Ryan has to keep up with all these because of youth ministry and has to know what the young folks are into nowadays. But I'm fascinated by social media. Not so much by what people post, although that can get very interesting at times. I'm fascinated by what this whole thing of social media has done to our culture. And by saying that, here's what I'm not implying. I'm not going to stand up here and beat on Facebook for 30 minutes, even though some of you may want me to. I'm not going to do it because that's not the point. But it's fascinating how something like social media has shifted a lot of things in our culture. For example, I looked this week on Facebook, I have 792 friends. I was really impressed with that when I looked at Pastor Ryan's number of friends and it was under 500, so I beat him. But then I was depressed after looking at Pastor Amy, who had like 8,000. So it was like, okay, so I'm right in the middle, which is fine. But I can have 792 friends on Facebook and amazingly still feel very isolated and alone. In fact, you know, where technology should make us more connected, it seems to have had this opposite effect. There was actually a study, and I found it on the Guardian website, in 2017 that said that even though social media allows us to be connected to our loved ones 24/7, it's actually making us feel lonelier. And the report suggested that if you spend over 2 hours a day on social networks, your chances of feeling socially isolated are twice as high. So 2 hours on social media increases your loneliness by double. Anybody else think that is fascinating? I mean, that is so interesting. What should be tearing down these barriers, what should be tearing down fences and walls, is actually having this opposite effect of building them up around us. And what else I find fascinating is how social media has changed how we communicate with one another. Social media is like the platform where if you want to say something, if you want to say anything, whether it's true or false, whether it's incendiary or not, whether it's right, it doesn't matter. You can post anything you want. Anytime. It's amazing. And what I find most fascinating, though, is that as a culture, we have become more interested in commenting than on conversation. Anybody else notice that? We like to throw a post out there, and I say we as the collective general humanity. I don't have any of you in mind. But we post this comment, and then somebody else comes behind and posts their comment, and somebody else posts their comment. And for what? It's just this string of people talking past and through each other without ever having this. And in a lot of ways, I think social media has taken conversation away from us. And I'm really more concerned about the next generation who can't have a conversation more than 140 characters long and like to post whatever they want. What happens to them when they need real human interaction? And really, that's what I want us to look at today, is kind of this aspect of social media and the isolation that comes with it. But not only do we have, you know, isolation, loneliness, and communication things that social media brings up, but also one other fascinating thing that I want to mention is social media has a tendency to allow us to enter echo chambers where we just surround ourselves with people just like us that think just like us, talk just like us, act just like us. And we get in this room and these groups and we just feed off each other. And I think that's equally dangerous as well. Now, don't get me wrong, I like social media. I don't post often. If you're my friend on Facebook, sorry, I don't post very often. And you know, Facebook has algorithms running in the background, so if you post something, there's a great chance I won't see it because Facebook changes that system up all the time. I don't know who I'm seeing stuff from. But my family makes fun of me because I do have Facebook rules, and some of them are this. If you're on my feed, you are important to me. Now, you may say, why? You have 792 friends. Because one of my rules is, if we went to college together and we haven't talked in 20-whatever years, I don't care. I'm just being real. I don't care what you had for dinner. I don't care what your child did. If I cared, I'd have picked up the phone and called you. But if you live in Des Moines, if you're a member of Ashworth, if you're my family, or if you're one of the few people I do stay in contact with from college or history of my life, I'll keep you in my news feed. So to try to keep me from being isolated. But you know, social media for many of us creates these pseudo connections and gives us this sense of false community. And as we think about relationships, and we've been in this Fences series, what I want to look at today is, if we're going to have healthier relationships in some of our lives, it is time for us to maybe tear down a few fences. You know, we started week one with building some fences because we need some healthy boundaries in our lives. And the last 2 weeks, we talked about miscommunication and conflict resolution, and we talked about mending fences. Well, today I want to talk about taking the wrecking ball to some of the fences that maybe we've built in our lives that shouldn't be there. But how do we do that? Does that mean we need to get off social media? Well, for some of you, it probably wouldn't hurt, and it may make you happier if you quit looking at it. Because if you're like some people, I know you can get your blood pressure up when you see certain things. But no, I don't think the solution is getting off social media. As I said, I'm not bashing Facebook or Twitter or all that stuff today, because social media really isn't the problem. It brings the real problem to the forefront. Because whether the issue isn't about whether or not you post a picture of your lunch for the world to see, I don't care. The issue is, do we really see people? Or how do we see people? Because I think when we get lost in this comment culture and we don't engage in conversation and we just lob these hand grenades back and forth at each other, we lose the value of individuals. We fail to see people as they truly are. Even for many of us, sometimes we post these happy pictures all the time as if our life is this roses and buttercups existence, and it's not. So we have this fake facade that goes out there. And we need to ask, are we really seeing people? Are we really concerned about them? Do we really love and care for these people, other than just being nosy about what's going on in their lives? And do we really want to engage them in conversation, or are we content with just comments here and there? What's the answer? How do we deal with this? How can we push against this natural desire for isolation? Because I do think that is a natural push for many of us. I contend today that the answer is we need to tear down some fences through hospitality. Now, if you were here back in February this year, Pastor Amy actually preached this message already. You may have forgotten. I forgot. I can't remember what I had preached last week. I didn't preach last week. She preached The Lost Art of Hospitality. And I went back and re-listened to it, and it was great. And if you missed it, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. Because in that message, she began by talking about how we think about hospitality. Even as I say that word, I think we all have a mental picture that pops up, don't we? What comes to your mind when you think about hospitality? I mean, we think about it as maybe a dinner party, an event, or maybe we think about the hospitality industry with hotels and restaurants and theme parks and cruise ships. Those are all considered the hospitality industry. Or maybe we think about the countless magazines or televisions or TV stations or television shows. HGTV is a horrible one, you know, where it talks about entertaining, Food Network, how to throw that perfect dinner party, that kind of thing. So I know when we talk about hospitality, we all have an image that comes to mind. And the reason I know that is because when I thought about this message 2 weeks ago and I started processing and reading through the scripture and reading some commentaries and things like that, I thought this message was going to go here. And then I started studying more and more and more, and my message is going to end up over here. So I know we all have this image of what it means, but I want to ask you if you would put that image aside today, because I want to challenge us to think beyond the Martha Stewart hospitality and the American idea of what it means to be hospitable, and begin to broaden our understanding and see what the rest of the world already knows. And you may think, well, what do you mean? As pastor, I've had incredible opportunities to travel the world, amazingly, and I had never thought I would, but it's been awesome. I've had the opportunity, and I remember several years ago, I got to go to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, with Josiah Carter and Beza Threads. And you know what amazed me was that I was invited into people's homes, and I was treated to coffee and popcorn. Now, you think that's kind of a weird combination. But in that culture, it's very appropriate because coffee is abundant and cheap, and so is popcorn. And one of the ways they can be hospitable and they can invite you in is they don't worry about if the napkins all match. They don't worry about if the glasses look, if it's the fine china or anything like that. In fact, as they're cooking the coffee over open coals in the living room, it gets a little smoky, to be honest. But they're not worried about any of that. What they're worried about is making sure that you know you are honored, an honored guest. And they're not worried about what they serve you. They want to serve you something, but they're more concerned about conversing with you, talking to you, getting to know you. And that really is a shift away from what we think about hospitality. I saw it in Ethiopia. I've seen it in Haiti. I've seen it in Liberia. And I imagine there are a list of other countries. In fact, I've heard that some of our friends from India that live here in our culture now, one of the biggest shocking things that they've had to experience is just how closed American homes are. That in their country and in their culture, they are used to walking in and just freely coming and going into each other's lives. And here, no. Because we keep our doors shut, we build high privacy fences, because as my neighbor told me when we built ours, he and I together, I split the cost with him, he said, well, we need to build this because good fences make good neighbors. No, they don't. They make isolated neighbors. Means my dog can't run in your yard and do their business, and I know why you don't want that. It's understandable, but good fences don't make good neighbors. Good fences make barriers between us. And so what the rest of the world already knows is something that we as Americans really fight hard against, and that's this idea of genuine, ordinary hospitality. Because at its core, hospitality is about answering one of humanity's most basic needs, the need to be known and the need to know others. And this really is at the core, at the heart of following Jesus. You see, Jesus spoke about hospitality. He actually, in Amy's sermon in February, she used Luke chapter 14, where he tells a parable about showing hospitality. We know that he was, even though with no home, he was an incredibly hospitable person. You go into the early church in Acts chapter 2, where they shared everything. There was common. There was this hospitality taking place. In fact, in Acts 28, you read the story where Paul is shipwrecked, and he's on this island, and there the governor of the island opens his home to Paul and takes care of these prisoners for 3 days to show hospitality to them. It's amazing. And then you read the letters that Paul wrote, and Peter wrote, and John wrote, and the author of Hebrews wrote, and you see that all of them make mention of this aspect of faith called hospitality. In fact, I want to look at four different verses from four different writers to just show you how we see this throughout Scripture. We'll start with Romans chapter 12, verse 13, which is what the Apostle Paul wrote. And look at this one. Romans 12, 13, it says, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. So this is the end of his letter. He's getting ready to wrap it up. He said all he needs to say about grace and sin and all this. And at the end of this letter is, hey, my final thoughts to you as the church in Rome. Hey, share with people and be hospitable. Practice hospitality. Then you get to 1 Peter. And in 1 Peter, he's writing this letter. So this is the Apostle Peter. And he says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. That last part's pretty important. We're going to come back to that in a second. But again, at the end of this letter, Peter's saying, hey, here's some things you need to know. And oh yeah, before I go, practice hospitality. Be hospitable to one another. We look over at John, the third letter that we have in our New Testament from John. 3 John, it's one chapter long. It's pretty short. In verses 5 through 8, he says these things. He says, we ought therefore to show hospitality to brothers and sisters so that we may work together for the truth. And we don't know who wrote Hebrews, but the writer of Hebrews is talking, and he says this, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters, but do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, By doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. And this earlier this week, Pastor Ryan's like, you're not going to use that verse, are you? Because you're going to explain that whole angels thing? And I'm like, you know, all you have to understand is that's a reference back to the Old Testament where Abraham and Sarah entertained angels when the Lord gave them a message that said, you're going to be the father of the nation, of Israel. And they entertained angels. And are we supposed to do this because it might be angels? It doesn't matter, because the writer says, don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. It says, hey, take care of each other, love one another. But hey, don't just get so inwardly focused that all you think about is the people around you right here in this room on Sunday morning. Love one another, yes, but it's bigger than that. Look outside this room. Look outside this building. Look across the street from where you live. And do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. Each time at the end of these letters, these men who walk with Jesus remind those of us who are following him now to practice, to offer, and to show hospitality. And each time when that word hospitality comes up, it's the same Greek word, philoxenia. Put it on the screen for you so it makes you feel smarter today for coming to church, right? Look, you now know a Greek word. You know, we don't do this often, but I like this word. You know, sometimes when you look at this word, it's a compound word. It has two, to help us understand the meaning, we break it apart. And the first part of this word, philo, maybe you've heard it in another word like Philadelphia. What's Philadelphia mean? Brotherly love. So philo means love. Xenia. Maybe you've heard that one on the news when they talk about xenophobia. What is that? Fear of the stranger, fear of the foreigner. So when we see this word in the Greek, in the New Testament, in all these letters that's been written, what does this word mean? It means love for the stranger. Even in its definition is where I got hung up this week, because I thought I was going to come in here to you today and say, you know what you need to do? You need to take care of each other. You need to open your doors, and you need to sign up for dinners for six, and you need to do this. And the more I studied and the more I got into this, I saw that that is about this much of what the writers of these letters are talking about. That if all we do is open our doors and love one another, we're only getting half of the intended aspect of hospitality. You see, when we go back to the first century and we understand why they would say this, there's a whole concept behind this that we don't have to deal with. Because if I travel down to Missouri and I get to Kansas City tonight and I need a place to stay, I have my choice. I just walk into any hotel, motel I want, pay the money, and I'm good to go. If I get hungry, I get even more choices. I can find any number of restaurants to go eat at. But in the first century, hotels, motels were not abundant, and restaurants weren't either. And if you were traveling, which often was a very unsafe thing to do, which is why the story of the Good Samaritan and the guy that gets beaten up by robbers is so real to them, because you wouldn't do that because traveling was treacherous. And when you get to where you're going, you depended upon the kindness of strangers to help you, to give you a place to sleep and to feed you and give you the food that you needed. This was really, hospitality for them was a matter of life and death oftentimes. Whereas for us, it's a matter of convenience. So to understand hospitality, we go back and understand that at its root, it comes to love. The heart of the issue is love, welcoming the stranger, the outsider, into our space, making room for them, making them feel welcome, meeting their needs, providing a safe space. And it's one of the simplest things that we can do, but can also be the most challenging. And I understand that, because even though I stand up here before you most Sundays and I preach this message, it's easy for you to think, well, that Brent, he's really this outgoing, extroverted guy. I'm not. I'd rather be holed up in my office with a book right now, but I don't get to do that. I'm more introverted than extroverted, and that's how I am. And the thought of me going across the street, knocking on my neighbor's door and saying, hey, would you like to come over for dinner? Scares me to death. That's why I told Carrie to do it. So I can take the guilt off me and put it on her. Now you're responsible. There, now go. I wish I was only kidding about that, but I'm not really. But I understand where we are because we get comfortable. We get what we like what we're used to. And the idea of opening ourselves up to the stranger really is unsettling. Culturally, I think we have created some systems that are very challenging for us to be hospitable. Yeah, it's very easy to be hospitable to people that look like us and think like us and talk like us, believe what we believe. But really, to get to the core of hospitality, it's beyond that. It's extending beyond just what we're comfortable with. One of the things I think culturally that we've done begins with our homes. And again, I'm preaching to Brent here more than anybody. Our homes have become places of refuge. There's nothing wrong with that. I need a refuge every now and then, a place to get away, away from the email, away from social media, away from this, that, and the other, so I don't have to think about things. But unfortunately, that place of refuge is now a place of refuge about 7 days a week. And because it's my refuge, it means I'm very unwilling to open it up, to allow others in, to allow others to be a part of it. We work hard. We come home at the end of a long day. We're tired. We're spent. We've had conversations. And so we hit the button on our garage door. We drive into our garage. We hit that button before we get out of the car because, God forbid, the neighbors see us walking around the car to go in the house. And we might actually have to engage in a conversation. Home is our retreat, our refuge. But what if instead of seeing our homes as only our place of refuge, we began to see it as a gift from God, a good gift to be shared with those around us, a place where real people live a real faith in front of the neighbors and the strangers to see exactly what real faith looks like? Think about that for just a moment. What if they could see what it truly meant to follow Jesus? One book I read this week put it this way. It said, "The hard-hitting truth: we could use more ordinary Christians opening up their ordinary lives so others can see what life is like in light of the gospel looks like. And what better place to watch Christians than in their home?" Think about the mental picture that many people have about Christianity. What do they think? Well, as I thought about that, I thought, well, they're probably thinking about the sound bites on television and the people that they can get to speak for Christians on the media. How many of you say those people speak for you? They don't speak for me. Not the majority of the time. And if I think about my neighbor that probably doesn't follow Jesus, and I think about what they probably think about Christians, what comes to their mind? The loudest voices in our culture. You know, if that was the only opinion I had of Christianity, I don't know that I would follow Jesus either. So what can we do to overcome that mentality? What can we do to break that down, to get through that with them? You know what the answer is? Live a real faith in front of them. I mean, there's yahoos on the news all the time saying, well, Jesus does this. And what do you think it would mean for your neighbor if they heard you say, not my Jesus? My Jesus doesn't talk like that. My Jesus doesn't believe that. My Jesus teaches a different message than that. See, we have the opportunity when we invite somebody into our place of refuge and we bring them in, we have the opportunity to model for them, to live for before them exactly what faith looks like. And that's not a perfect faith. That's not a faith that has every question answered. That's not a faith that has it all figured out. It might even be a faith that struggles with doubt a little bit. But how incredible and how impacting would it be if instead of the talking heads on television being the only voice they think that Christians are, they look and they sit across the table from you and they talk to you in conversation and they get to see that the heart of a Christ follower is real and genuine and it's not some act, it's not some show. You see, and I thought about this week, and here's how I can relate it to you, and I hope this is not offensive, I don't mean it to be, but sometimes people will ask me, they'll say, what church do you go to? And depending on the setting, I'll say Ashworth Road Church. Caught that, right? And they go, what'd you say? I said, Baptist. I'm a Baptist, okay? Now, for some of you, you may be thinking, well, be proud of that. Are you familiar with all the people that claim the name Baptist? Do you know that there are horrible, hateful people in this world that say, hey, we're Baptists. I don't want to be associated with them. In fact, I know, at least in the first service, let me look around the room here real quick. In the first service, I actually did not make eye contact with people because I knew they had visited 17 churches in the Des Moines metro area when they moved here, and they refused to come here because we had Baptist in our name. Now, we can look at that and say that's silly, but we can also look at that and say, I get it. There are some people that don't help us at all. And I'm not advocating to take Baptist out of the name. I don't think that's the answer, because here's my solution. When people say, how can you be Baptist? I look, and first I say, well, I'm not a good Baptist, so that's first off. But number two, and they say, what's your job? And I said, I pastor that church, so it's okay. But here's the reality. If I can get them through the doors, if I can get them to walk in this place one time on Sunday morning, to walk into this room, to experience a real and genuine worship experience, to meet you people who will love them and greet them, and it doesn't matter who they are, where they've come from, what they look like, you are going to welcome them and make them feel special. I know that the name on that sign is insignificant when it comes to the fact if they walk through these doors, they'll say, wow, you were not what I'm expecting. And how many of your neighbors and how many of your coworkers and how many people that you bump into at Come and Go or the dry cleaner or wherever need that same experience with you around your dinner table, where they could sit down with you and through one dinner they would go, wow, you are not what I expected. Because I know that if we open the door, we can dispel the myth. And what better way to dispel that myth about what people who follow Jesus are really like than engaging them in real, genuine relationships that begin in our homes, around the table, over a shared meal. If we're reduced to the sound bites and the social media post as Christians, that's not a Jesus I'm interested in following either. But if we can show them what authentic Christianity looks like, we can show them a Savior worth following. I have no doubt in my mind. Not only is our homes can be a barrier, and we've got to get over that, but I think an even bigger barrier to us is this. It's our lifestyle. I'm as guilty as the next person. We schedule our lives to the very end of what we're capable of doing. We continue to take on more and more. And I was talking with somebody this week, and they said, we're trying to have dinner with this couple from the church. And you wouldn't believe it. We're already looking at 6 weeks out to make that happen. Seriously? What is wrong with us that we think we wear our busyness as a badge of honor? I've really tried to, you guys come up to me sometimes and you'll say, oh, did you have a busy week? I try really not to say yes. I had a week. If it's busy, it's my fault. Because nobody's going to create space in my life for me but me. You guys won't. You'll take every last inch that I give you. But sometimes we have to step in. And in your life, if you want to be a person of hospitality, you have to be the one that says, enough is enough. I'm not going to live in the extremes. I'm going to create margin. And that applies to our time, and it also applies to our money. Because it's hard to have somebody over and show hospitality if we have no money to feed them. In one of the books I read this week, the lady was taught, it's a great book. If you're into hospitality, I highly encourage it. The author's name is Rosario Butterfield, and it's called The Gospel Comes with a Key to the House or something like that. And in it, she talks about how they intentionally live below their means so that they can spend more on groceries because they're always expecting someone to come over. They're always expecting someone at the dinner table. We need to do that. Unfortunately, we relegate hospitality to when I have time and when I have money. Anybody ever reached that point yet in your life where I've got time and I've got money? I'm not there. Somebody give me hope, please. No hope. But this feeds into this mentality when we think it's when I have time and when I have money. It feeds into the mentality that says that hospitality is an event. And it's really not. It's not something that's supposed to occasionally happen when we can both work it out on our schedule. Hospitality is supposed to be a lifestyle. As I was reading this book this week, this woman was talking about, just as a parent, she has young kids at home, and she said it's an incredible lesson to her kids for them to see people constantly flooding into their home and at their dinner table, and the interaction and the gospel that is shared, and just how they live life in these relationships and how meaningful it was for her kids to see. And I think, man, I wish I had that. But as Ryan and I were talking this week, he looks at me at one point. He's like, don't share this, Brent. Don't do it. I'm going to share it, Ryan. He says, I'd love to be hospitable. I can't even get my family to eat together. What I didn't tell him in that conversation is neither can I. I got kids running cross country. I got a kid in marching band and jazz band and show choir, and he's got practice on Monday night and Thursday night, and the kids have youth group on Wednesday night, and this kid's in here and out there. It's complicated when you have 7 children. But it's not impossible. What it says to me, and this is the mirror at me, not at Ryan, it's the mirror at me. It says if I really valued hospitality, I'd make it a priority. I'd fit it into the schedule. I'd make sure that we did the dinner together and that my neighbors knew that the door was open at 6 o'clock at night, anytime they wanted. I say that because I want to know what time you eat dinner, because I'm going to start visiting your houses this week with all 7 of my children. Only teasing. Only teasing, sort of. No. We live in the we live in the extreme, and it's time for us to create margin financially and with time in order to be able to be people of hospitality. When we go back to what Paul said about hospitality in Romans 12, it's very fascinating because he uses this expression. He says, practice hospitality. Practice, kind of an interesting word. I looked up the Greek and what all it meant, and it's interesting. But what it reminded me was, as you guys know, I play the piano. And to become a decent piano player, I had to practice. But never in my life did I stumble upon practicing. I didn't practice by accident. I never found myself sitting at the piano going, oh, how did I get here? I'm practicing the piano. For some of us, we think hospitality is going to happen like that. Oh, it's just going to happen. And Paul says, no, you got to practice it. And behind that word practice is a pursuit. Pursue it. If I want to be a better piano player, I'm going to go practice. I'm going to set aside time in my schedule to make it happen. I'm going to pursue it. And that's going to take some effort on my part. And when Paul says practice hospitality, he's saying, look, you're never going to stumble into this. It's never just going to be happen and you're going to become a hospitable person. No, you're going to have to put forth this effort into it to see that it happens. Otherwise, it'll never happen. And so that's what Paul says. And then we jump back to what Peter said. You guys remember that fun expression at the end of his thing? What did he say? Without what? Grumbling. Now, not that any of you would ever grumble about anything. But you know what it means? When it takes effort, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. You're going to be asked to be around people that you may not care for. It may not be your most favorite thing. It may mean they have to come over when your house is a mess. Oh, God forbid that they see there's dust on the end table, because nobody has dust on the end table. What? But it's going to be hard. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money. And Peter says, the Brent Clark translation of this, suck it up, buttercup. It's going to be hard. Just like it was hard for God to take on human flesh and walk among us and live a sinless life and go to the cross. So anytime you think you've got it bad, think of Jesus on the cross and suck it up. Because it's going to be hard, but don't grumble. And the reason I say that is because it's very easy for us. You know, the Greek behind that is this murmuring kind of thing. You know what murmuring is? If you've had kids, you know what murmuring is. What'd you say? Nothing. It's what you say under your breath when you're complaining. I can't believe they came over here. I don't have anything to do, blah, blah, blah. Stop that. Hospitality is a gift that we are allowed to give other people. And it's not a one-way street. It's not like when we show hospitality to someone, we're just the ones giving, because what's amazing is even if they don't give a dime, even if they never say anything, there is a reciprocalness to hospitality where anytime we show it, it will come back to us. We grow, we're stretched, we learn, our faith deepens anytime and every time we step into it. But we can't just sit here and gripe about it. We can't gripe about it. Last thing I want to point out to you is this. When Peter says, don't grumble about it, I think he says that for people like me, who would rather pull into the garage and shut the door and exist in my refuge without anybody around me. Because I would look and I would say, oh, hospitality, well, that's for the Kerry Clarks of the world. Unfortunately, I married the Kerry Clark of the world, right? But she loves to throw a party. It can be a little intimidating. But she loves that. She doesn't complain. She loves it. So if Peter says, do this, but don't complain about it, I can put Brent on the beginning of that. Brent, suck it up, buttercup. Do this. Because hospitality isn't just for those who have the gift of hospitality. It's the call for every Christ follower. When we think about it, as I've already said, there are so many preconceived notions in our world about what it means to follow Jesus, what it means to have faith. Is there really any better way to share the gospel, to live the gospel, to show them what authentic faith is like, than inviting them into our space and just living it out before them? And it doesn't have to be special. It doesn't have to be a meal every time. It can be coffee and dessert. It can be, hey, I see you're raking your leaves. Let me help you. Let me be hospitable in your space and serve to break down the fences between us so that we can get to know each other. That's what hospitality is all about. So how do we live this out? I'm going to try to wrap this up quick because my time is running short. But this is the main point of this message right here. And this is going to make some people offended, I can guarantee, but sorry, it's the Bible. What prevents us from hospitality? I narrowed this down to one thing. We fail to see the image of God in other people. What do I mean? We have a real bad tendency in our culture and in the church. We define people by certain things. We define them by their nationality. We define them by their legal immigration status. We define them by their sin. We define them by any number of things. And we use those things, since we've defined them by it, to be barriers between us. And we say, because you are that way, I will not engage you. So on the flip side, we, in all essence, we say, you're not worth it. You're not valuable. Yeah, I'm done. I'm out. So in this situation where we should be tearing down fences, we build fences between us and people who are on the other side of the political aisle than us. Those who may have a different sexual lifestyle than what we see in the Bible. Those who may be in our country legally or illegally. We use anything and everything we can to build a barrier between us and them. And in one of my favorite stories in the Gospel of Luke, there's this picture of Jesus. He's having dinner at the home of a religious leader. And he's reclining at the table. And the town prostitute comes in. Everybody knew her reputation. Everybody knew what she was known for. And when she comes into that room, she makes her way to Jesus. She's carrying an expensive jar of perfume. And with tears streaming down her face, she breaks that perfume over his feet and she anoints his feet. And with her hair, she wipes it off. The religious leaders in that room make this statement. If he knew what kind of person she was, if he knew who she was, he would never let her touch him. And Jesus basically says, I know. I just don't define her the way you do. You see, all the people around that table looked at this woman and saw her sin and said, that's who she is. And Jesus says, that's not who she is. That may be how she is or what she does. But her intrinsic value is not based on what she does. It's not based on the color of her skin. It's not based on the magnitude of the sin in her life. Her value is based on the fact that she is God's creation, created in His image. And the moment we look and we define other people by something other than the image of God is the moment we have built a fence between us and them. And it is the moment we have become ineffective as the messengers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You see, we have equated two things, acceptance and approval. And these aren't the same thing. You see, we assume if we accept somebody for who they are, then it also means we approve of everything they do. Those of you who are married, how many of you would say, I approve of everything my spouse does? If you do, let me know. I want to come to you for marriage counseling. I have children. My children don't even do everything I approve of. But you know what? I always accept them. I always accept them. And what that tells me is that I can open up my dinner table to somebody who has a different political view than me. I can open up my table to somebody who may live a different lifestyle than me. I can open up my table to anybody, and I can love and I can accept and accept them. Or excuse me, I can love and accept them. And it doesn't mean I approve of any of that. It doesn't matter. Because see, even Jesus was able to dine with sinners, but He didn't sin with sinners. He lived in the world, but He didn't live like the world. And that's the Jesus paradox. To love someone in spite of their sin and failures. And too often I think we think of hospitality as sitting around a table or in a church of people who look just like us, talk just like us, think just like us. And that misses the point. Because when we truly begin to see the image of God in others, we will be willing to invite them to our table and to build strong, and not be afraid to build strong, healthy relationships with people who are different than us. You see, it's time for the Church of Jesus Christ to stop buying into and being like the politics of America and believing that a divide exists between us when it doesn't. We don't have to buy into the hate and the fear and the toxicity. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, it's to both of you. Because the kingdom of Jesus Christ is greater than all that garbage. And it says, I can love you whether you and I agree on all this or not. Because you were created in God's image, and I'm created in God's image. And you know what? If you're not following Jesus, let me tell you about it. Let me show you why He's worth following. And I'm not going to yell and scream at you. I'm not going to call you an idiot. I'm not going to be hateful about it. I'm just going to say, hey, okay, we'll disagree on this. I don't approve of that, but that's all right. I don't have to. I still accept you as an individual. So you kind of understand as I say this why I thought my sermon was going to end over here. And I ended with a real challenge to myself. Am I willing to stop judging others? Am I willing to stop allowing people to be defined by their shortcomings, their sin, their failure? And am I willing to see the image of God in the neighbor across the street? That's what hospitality is all about. And just in case you need a reminder, all I'm asking you to do is live the way Jesus lived. He was hospitable. He invited the outcast and the sinners, the people everyone else in the world said wasn't worth it. That's the people He ate with. That's the one He spent time with. Matthew chapter 25. Jesus makes this statement. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked, and you gave me clothes to wear. And the people said, when did we do that? And he said, whenever you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. When we show hospitality to the stranger, we are showing hospitality to Jesus. On the flip side, when we refuse and we reject the stranger, guess who we're rejecting? How many times do we miss God because we reject somebody and we build that fence between them and us? I get saddened because I think about our culture and I think about where the church should be. Not us church, but church in around us. And when it comes to hospitality, we should be number one. There should be nobody in this culture that can out-hospitality the Church of Jesus Christ. And yet when I look, we're way behind. We become very content to sit in our hallowed halls with people that look and think and believe just like us, with a refusal to even step into the world and do what Jesus did, to dine with sinners. Not sin with sinners, just dine with them. The church should be leading this above everybody else. And I hope that's the challenge for us today. I know it's the challenge to me. As we drove home, was it Friday night, I think, from a football game, we turned on our street and I said to Carrie, we really need to invite the neighbors over to dinner sometime. They're not going to do it, nor should they. We should. We should be the ones to initiate. We should be the ones that are willing to become uncomfortable, to show the hospitality and grace of Jesus Christ to the person I live next to, the person I work next to the person I pick up my dry cleaning from. Wherever it is, that's the person we need to be showing hospitality to.